obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bonnie Allen, and I am a happy, grateful, joyous, and free member of Al-Anon. And really honored to be here, to be asked back, okay? And the other thing is, Larsine gave me a program from the very first roundup here, 30 years ago, of which I was the opening speaker. Oh, my God. And it's like, so Larsine said, okay, you got third time to get it right now. 30 years ago, oh my God, and here I am again, and you've invited me, and it's really an honor, and always wonderful to come back to my roots. This is where I got the program. Thank you to the committee for inviting me. Everybody's been wonderful and gracious, and, you know, I mean, the goodies, and just good old Southern California program is unbelievable. We're very lucky to have this, and I feel lucky that I got to experience it. You know, I moved to Canada 26 years ago. Oh my God. And I remember Bob Elb. I'm sure you know Bob. And he gave me great advice when I was moving to Canada, to Vancouver. He said, just remember that there's a meeting in Chicago called We Don't Care How You Do It in Southern California. And let me tell you, in Vancouver, they don't care how you do it here. It's different, but it works. And I am just so grateful that I had 14 years of getting my roots and my grounding here. We are so lucky to have the program we have here. And looking back at this program, I saw my heroes were some of the speakers. Elsa Chamberlain. Oh my God. When I was new, it was like, oh, I just want to grow up and be like Elsa. To me, she was the epitome of what an Al-Anon should be. She had grace, compassion, a sense of humor, a humility about her. And Winnie Eddy, I mean, all these people, and Bernie Eubinger was here, and oh my goodness gracious, and Bob was a speaker. And anyway, those are my roots, and I remember we'd go to a meeting and we'd say, oh, Elsa's speaking again, oh my goodness, and how privileged am I to have heard all those people, and those were my beginnings that have stood me well. So I am... it's interesting that the first topic was a new beginning, and 30 years later, keep the fire burning. And I feel blessed that I still have the fire burning, and I'm so grateful for this program. I really am. So 40 years later, I just celebrated 40 years last month in Al-Anon. I know. I was 5 when I came here. I was 5 years old. And if you don't recognize, maybe you recognize me now. Yeah. But I ran into somebody who said, you haven't changed a bit. And I said, you know, there are 3 stages of life, youth, middle age, and you haven't changed a bit. And I'm at the you haven't changed a bit life. But, you know, it got me thinking of, oh, my God, how I have changed. How I have changed from the person who walked into the doors of Al-Anon. We should have before and after photos. We really should. We really should. Not only the alcoholic, he's sort of, I always dressed him and he looked great, right? He went to his first meeting and drove up in his Mercedes in a lovely suit and his hair was groomed, you know? And I, on the other hand, drove a beat-up Volkswagen that looked like a drunk's car. I used to wear these, that's 40 years ago, these shmatas, right? These like muumuus in those days. And I wore a babushka on my head. because I never had money to get my hair done. I mean, I had to keep him looking good, right? And my nails were bitten to the quick. You didn't know I had dimples. And let me tell you, nothing was funny in my life. Nothing was funny. And so how I have changed, and it is by not doing anything spectacular other than showing up, going to meetings, working the program to the best of my ability, and being who I am today and allowing who I am to come out. I have to tell you, you know, so it's really special coming back to my roots. My very first Al-Anon meeting was the Arlington Group on Wilshire Boulevard. And I walked into that meeting, and Myra was the speaker. I don't know, may not know her. But she, I totally identified with her. She talked about having to keep an eye on the alcoholic, and how she did that was he drank at a bar. So she used to sit out front in her car and try and keep an eye on him, and he would always sort of slip out, right? So she realized it had a back door. So what she did was there was a tree outside the bar, and she would climb up and sit in the tree where she could get a view of the front and the back door. And I identified with this woman. I felt right at home. I don't know. And you know, I always say from the first day I walked into Al-Anon, I loved it, but it was really, I never really knew what I felt until I came here. And what I really realized is that I felt safe for the very first time. I walked into a room of people who knew exactly what it was like to live with an alcoholic. Now, I was raised in a normal alcoholic home in Cleveland, Ohio. And my father owned a bar, perfect. And I adored my father. It was my mother who was the problem. I never got along with her, the non-drinker. She was the problem. My father, I knew, got drunk, smashed up cars. The police would bring him home every now and then. I sort of knew what went on with him. But what was her problem? What was her problem? And I was also raised in a really old world Polish Catholic family. And I married an Irish Catholic, and I always say there's a real difference. You know, the Irish bring the priest home and they have a drink together, right? But the Polish Catholics, we believe everything they say, and it's grim, and we're here to work and sacrifice. And you know, when I was married to this drunk, I just knew that he was my cross to bear. That's really how I felt. And anyway, the only thing I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous was when things got really bad at home, my mother would threaten my father to send him to the double amen. And that's what she called him, the double amen. Because you know, the very first AA meeting was in Cleveland, Ohio, right? And when she said the double amen, it was really to stoop to the bottom. Really to the bottom. And so I was raised in this alcoholic home, not knowing it's an alcoholic home. You just know something is wrong, but what is it? And all the focus was on my father. And, you know, you look back and you say, God really was always taking care of me. My mother sent me to ballet class. And for me, my ballet became my escape. I don't know if you've ever seen Chorus Line. There's a song said, everything is beautiful at the ballet. And for me, everything was wonderful at the ballet. I was safe. I had wonderful teachers who nurtured me because I wasn't getting any nurturing at home. And it was my little escape. And I just knew I had to get out of Cleveland. That was the problem. If you came from Cleveland, you'd have my problems. If you were living with my mother, you would understand I had to get out. And the only way a little Polish Catholic girl from Cleveland leaves in those days, the late 60s, because my mother had my life planned for me, was I said, I'm going to New York. I'm going to give it a three-month try. And in my heart, I knew I was leaving forever. And so they gave me $50. And off I went to New York City. And when I would get really afraid, there I was, this, you know, I'm raised with all those things, an alcoholic in an alcoholic home, as I was always terrified. Didn't believe in myself, people pleaser. I mean, it was just like always, but always terrified, I guess is what I remember. And I'd call my mother when I was really afraid, and I'd hear that voice, and she just screamed all the time, and I can't go back. I can't go back to that. I've got to stick it out, you know? And so I did. I got some jobs dancing and some shows. It was beyond anything a little Polish girl from Cleveland could dream of. And during one of those shows, the first day of rehearsal, in walked this tall, charming Irishman. And I have to say, right before I left Cleveland, my parents had a particularly vicious fight. My dad came home really drunk, and he was getting physically violent with my mother. And I remember I got between the two of them, and I picked my father up and threw him against the wall. And he fell down, you know, and so drunk he could not get up. And this is not how a Polish Catholic girl is raised to treat her parents. And I made a vow to myself that night that I was never going to go out with or marry anybody who drank. I remember what I was wearing. I remember everything about that moment of where I was standing in my mother's dining room, right? So I meet this tall, charming Irishman who drank a little. But, you know, it's that moment when we recognize potential, right? I just knew with a little work he would be okay. He just really needed somebody to love him, to take care of him, right? And it's that, you know, I look back at the people I dated, and it's always, I thought I was just attracted to charm, but I was just really attracted to neuroses, really. And so we got together. And that vow that I made to myself about not going out with anybody who drank, I don't know where it went, but I drank. You know, Sean used to be my 10 martini what the hell girl. We were in New York, we were in the theater, that's what we did, it was wonderful. And then we got a job, a show. Well, I got a job. So this is what's interesting. And this is, you know, I had so many red flags. I had so many red flags, I thought it was a parade. And I didn't listen to them. So this is an interest. And I just realized this red flag not too long ago. I auditioned for the show, Coco, with Katharine Hepburn. And I got the job. And my fiancé, Sean, auditioned for the show and did not get the job. So I told them that I would not do the show unless they hired him. And they did. And oh my God, that is a pattern that went on for 34 years. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, so we got this show. I got him the job. Our last stop was Los Angeles, right here. And we played at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and we got married. Now, my parents disowned me when they knew I was marrying Sean. My mother took me aside and said, you know, he's nothing but a drunk and a con artist. And I later found out she was right. So they disowned me. And when I arrived in Los Angeles, my mother had written this letter. You know, and there's nothing like a crazy Al-Anon untreated. Now, my mother found out, number one, that we were living together, which you don't do in the late 60s, Polish girl. So we had played Cleveland, and then the next stop was Chicago. My mother called every hotel in Chicago to find out where we were staying. They got on the phone and threatened to come and kill Sean. And then my mother, this is unbelievable, she found out who the producer of the show was, which was Rosalind Russell's husband, right? Yeah, Freddie Brisson, you think about this. And got in touch with him. When we've got a mission, wow, watch out. And She demanded that he fire me. Do you love it? Anyway, of course, that did not happen. But so that's how we started our marriage, huh? Is that crazy? So we got married. And but I thought, well, once we got married, you know, the drinking, we would settle down. And what happened is I settled down, but he didn't. And then I noticed his drinking. And it was just the insanity. As I said, he was not a drunk that got arrested or went to jail or anything like that. It was just the day-to-day insanity of living with an alcoholic. Again, it never occurred to me that he should work. When I walked into Al-Anon, I had three jobs. And now I was not trained to do anything. I was a dancer. And the other thing I have to say is, when I came here in Los Angeles, there was no work in those days. Everything was still done out of New York. I never danced again. I gave up my career in the New York Minute, not thinking, what would Bonnie want to do? What about my career? I had already gotten into heism. It's all about him. He wanted to stay here to try the film career, right? So I never danced again. I got jobs as secretaries, of which I was not trained to do, and I would get fired a lot. And I would come back from being fired, and Sean would pull out the LA Times want ads and look for other jobs for me to go on. And that's what my life was like. How crazy is that? And I look back now, and I do have regret. I do have regret about having given up a passion of mine. It took me a long time even to accept that, to even grieve it in the program. And so here we are, married, me taking care of everything. Bought this house in the Hollywood Hills. And Sean always said he never hid his drinking. He just hid the house in which he drank in. It was on a little trail in the Hollywood Hills. It had no foundation. It had no heat. We had no friends. And it's that whole thing of your world gets smaller and smaller when you are, as you get sicker and sicker, right? We had no family. I had one friend. She was sicker than I was, right? And, you know, we talk about denial. I look back now, and right before I got to the program, I went with this one friend I had. We went to a tarot card reader, and they read my cards, right? And she looked at me very seriously and said, Bonnie, someone very close to you has a severe drinking problem. And I thought, who are they to, like, these tarot card readers, like, nobody in my life has a severe problem. And I'm living with someone who's just like drinking a gallon a night, you know? And also, I think, I always say my perception has been severely affected by the disease of alcoholism. Sean and I would be sitting in this house in the Hollywood Hills, and he would drink the whole bottle of wine. And I would say, Sean, you drank that whole bottle of wine. And he would say, I didn't drink it all. And I would think, well, I wonder who did drink it. I know I didn't drink it. I believed everything he told me, you know? And that's what our life was like. The insanity. I had lots of jobs, and every time I lost one of those jobs, I humiliated myself a little more, lost a little more of my self-respect and my self-worth, and always trying to keep everything together. Keep it together, pay the bills. And I was down taking care of somebody who didn't need my help. I was always taking care of everybody. I was down in Newport Beach, and Sean called and said he joined AA. And I'll tell you, I was not impressed, because of course what I knew about AA was what my mother said, right? And so I thought, well, have we stooped so low, you know? And and I came back a week later, and so he had a week of sobriety. And so he was telling me about these people in AA, and they had this look about them, and it's this God thing. And I thought, oh my God, you know, now he's gotten me into a cult, right? I knew that's what it was. Because I don't know about you, but whatever happened to him happened to me. I was so joined at the hip. If he was in a good mood, we were in a good mood. If he was in a bad mood, we were in a bad mood. So when he joined AA, I thought, we joined AA, right? But then he told me that there was a place for me called Al-Anon. And so I went to my very first meeting, and Myra was speaking, and I felt at home. I felt at home. And I was told to give it a try. I didn't know if I wanted to stay married or get divorced. They told me not to make any emotional decisions in the first 6 months. Just give Al-Anon a try. And they also told me they made no promises about my marriage. They made no promises that my husband would stay sober. But they did make a promise that I could turn my life around. And I hated who I had become. And I didn't even know who I was. You know, I have to tell you again, this mother that I hated, when I walked into the doors of Al-Anon, I was a carbon copy of her. I did everything I could not to be like her, and I was a carbon copy of her. And so I started working this program and started taking the suggestions and started being, you know, the cookie lady and all of those little jobs. Then I started getting self-worth and pats on the back and finding out who I was. Who is Bonnie? You know, it was really easy to blame the alcoholic for everything. I blamed him for that house in the Hollywood Hills. And I remember my sponsor said to me, "Didn't you have to sign your name on that?" I thought, I forgot all about that, my participation in it. I had to look at my part in it. And I was also told not to have any expectations in that first year of sobriety, that I was supposed to just let him get sober, and after a year, we'll see if something would change. And so when he had a year of sobriety, my sponsor, my first sponsor who's sitting here at the table, Jean, had a great suggestion, and she said, "Bonnie, I want you to think of something you're willing to turn over to Sean." Now, Jean was a very busy lady in those days. She had a full-time job. She had three children. She sponsored a ton of people. If you wanted to see her, you went over to her house, and you went grocery shopping with her or folded the laundry, and you would talk program. And I thought, she's so busy, she'll forget about this little suggestion she gave to me, right? But she did not. She did not. And so anyway, 3 weeks went by, and I thought, oh, I'm off the hook, right? I'm off the hook. And so she did come and say, "Bonnie, what are you willing to turn over to Sean?" When she said that, you know, it had to be you had to let go completely. And so I thought about it a lot. And I said, "You know what, there's absolutely nothing that I trust him with." And she said, "Well, that won't work. You've got to find something." And so I came up with the laundry. I turned over the laundry to Sean. A week went by and he didn't do the laundry. And 2 weeks went by and he didn't do the laundry. And I called her and I said, "Jean, you know, I could have told you, these alcoholics, they're not going to do it. He's not going to do it." And she said, "I don't care what you do, but do not touch the laundry." You know, in AA, they say, before you want to take another drink, call another member of AA. She said, "Before you go to touch that laundry, I want you to call another member of Al-Anon. Do not touch the laundry." And so 3 weeks went by, and there was nothing clean anywhere, and he finally did the laundry, and it was awful. Came out terrible. Like, it did not. But you know what? It was a huge change in our relationship. What happened is it was the first time there was any consistency. I don't know about you, but there's no consistency in an alcoholic home. Nobody follows through on anything. Also, when I got to the program, I will tell you, there was my way, and there was the wrong way. Just that simple. I knew what was right for everybody. So it was, what I learned is that there's my way and there's Sean's way and there's Mary's way, and they're not right or wrong. We just have our own way of doing things. And we started having some respect for each other. And there was no respect left in our marriage, I will tell you. So we started building from there. And I guess what I want to say also is sponsors who seem to have these stupid suggestions, right? take them, because you just don't know where it's going to take you. I never thought that would make such a huge change, right? And so we continued this journey of AA and Al-Anon, and growing and changing and finding out who I was. I could tell you Sean's favorite foods. I could tell you everything about him. I had he-ism. I couldn't tell you anything about me. And, goodness. What do you share after 40 years? There's so many monumental things that happen. But I guess around 8 years in the program, we thought, we'll see maybe if we want children, if what will happen. And so we did. And we had this adorable redhead, Kate, who was born 31 years ago now. I can't believe it. And she is privileged never to have known her father drunk, and was raised in the program, around the program, at meetings, and knows where the answer is if she chooses ever to come here. But anyway, so life changes and grows, and I went back to school, I went back to work, and then we had an opportunity to move to Canada. Now, I have to tell you, I was sort of glad to make a change and raise my daughter somewhere else other than Hollywood. And so we moved to Canada. Now, I have to tell you, in the worst of Sean's drinking, Sean is Canadian, never became a U.S. citizen. In the worst of his drinking, I used to think, oh my God, if he got in trouble, we're going to be deported, because if whatever happened to him would happen to me, they're going to deport me to Canada, right? And so 26 years ago, we moved to Canada for a new beginning. A new beginning, I think, for him. And it was a new beginning for us. It really was. And we had great hopes and expectations. And again, found the meetings, found people, and got involved immediately. And all those dreams that we had fell apart. There was a problem with the business, with his family, because his family was up there. And it was a chance for me to grow again. God is always giving me another opportunity. I do want to talk to you about my mother, which was a huge, huge change for me in the program. You know, you start working these steps, and I had to get to the amends step, and I was told to take care of my side of the street. And so I had, you know, after my mother tried to get me fired, disowned me, didn't speak to me for a number of years, I was told to start reaching out to her. So I sent her a generic card, again a suggestion by my sponsor, to just reach out and take care of my side of the street. So I sent her this generic card that didn't say anything, and I got my very first card back from her, also a generic card, thinking of you, and it was signed Mrs. Jessie Lapka. And that's how we began. And there would be a few cards back and forth. And occasionally I would pick up the phone and talk to her. Oh, and God, she just pushed all my buttons. She made me absolutely crazy. Like, I don't need this woman in my life. Why am I even doing this? Other than I am following the steps in the program. And I even would go visit her occasionally, you know. And I'd get off the plane, and she would say, oh, you wear jeans now. No. And I remember getting off the plane once, and she said, you know, Bonnie, if you're coming for a week, why bother come at all? And you know, the miracle happened in Al-Anon is, as I said, I was a carbon copy of her when I walked in. What I realized is she has lived with alcoholism her whole life. To treat her like a newcomer. I tried all those things. Treat her like a newcomer. Don't take anything personally. All of those sorts of things, you know. Don't go to the hardware store for milk. She can't be the loving mother that you want. And what I started hearing from her is, when she would say those really hurtful things, is that, Bonnie, and she didn't know how to say it, and I didn't know how to say it until I came to Al-Anon, is she really saying, Bonnie, I miss you so much. I wish you would come more often. She did not know how to say that. I started learning how to say that here. And she would say those things. I didn't have to respond. I didn't have to react to her. And so we began this relationship. You know, I became safer to be around. Let it begin with me. My mother never changed. My mother was always angry.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Resentful, never safe to be around. I remember when I was pregnant with Kate, and I would walk, I remember distinctly one day I talked to her on the phone right before I went to a meeting, and I'm the only daughter. You would think she would say, my expectations, Bonnie, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Nothing, ever, ever. My feelings were so hurt, and yet I'd walk into the Al-Anon meeting, my Arlington group, which was over 100 people, and everybody came up and said, Bonnie, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And I thought, you know, I'm getting what I need, not from her, and I had to let go of that. She was incapable of it. And my mother, really, so this relationship grew. She turned into a wonderful grandmother, even though she was not a great mother, let me tell you. But she became my hero. She really did. Because my mother got her first job at age 69, lied about her age. She worked in she said, all I know how to do is cook. So she worked in the kitchen. She started making salads. She was there until she was 91 years of age. She worked. She was self-supporting through her own contributions. She shoveled the snow in Cleveland at 4 in the morning before she went to work. And I can look back now and say, oh my God, how amazing. How amazing that she was able to do that with no tools, right? And she became my hero. And I remember I could share this from the podium, and then I was not telling her that. So again, the program allowed me to write her a letter and tell her how I loved her, how proud I was of her to be able to do something like that. I mean, I look at my age now and I was 5 when I came here, right? Yeah, so I look at her like what courage it took to get out there and do that with no self-worth, having lived with alcoholism her whole life. My father died and she blossomed, you know? And anyway, I never got a response. I talked to her on the phone, and all she said is, I got your letter. Thank you. Incapable. But it's really interesting because, again, another miracle happened of Al-Anon. I didn't want a relationship with my mother. I didn't even plan on loving my mother. And it's the gifts that you get here and the miracles that happen that you have no idea. And today I can really say I love my mom. My mother passed away in 2006 at 95. And she was mean to the bitter end, And I remember somebody, you know, would say when she was, because I went back to Cleveland and she was like, you know, I was there for the end. She had a stroke and she was in hospice and unconscious. And somebody said to me, you know, you should just tell her that you're okay and it's okay for her to go. And I said, oh no, you don't tell my mother anything. If I told her that, she would say, nobody's going to tell me how to live and nobody's going to tell me how and when to die. And that's what she was like. And I could love my mother. I could absolutely love my mother. And that's a miracle, this program. Don't leave before your miracles because, oh my God, there's so much in store for you. And it's really interesting. I came across this right before I was coming down a few weeks ago. I was just going through old papers. And I came across a note that my mother could never say anything verbally. But this is, again, a miracle of the program. And I kept it. I obviously kept it because it was really special. It was after one of her visits, and she would come up to Canada quite often. And she wrote me this note. Bonnie, to let you know, I enjoyed this trip very much. It's not dear Bonnie or anything. You get the picture. And she said, thank you so very much. Love, your mother. So don't leap before your miracles, right? Yeah. So, you know, I find myself, I talk to her more now than I did when she was alive. It's really interesting because she's really safe to talk to now. Unbelievable. But there are things that are still within me that are still not healed. You know, I think, as I said, for me, I think I will always be affected by the disease of alcoholism. I have been healed. I have been able to function now. I still have those triggers that are those old ideas that still are within me. God is still working on them and still healing them. And I have to say 2005 was an interesting year. I had a sponsor briefly up in Canada who was just really great, Joyce. And we developed a neat relationship there, very short time, but she was just coming home from an Al-Anon get-together and was hit and killed instantly by a drunk driver. You think, oh, what's that all about? It was also the year my mother died, and it was also the year I ended my marriage after 34 years. And again, the program doesn't promise you that your marriage is going to survive, right? And it's really interesting. You look back now, and I always say I stay too long at the fair, but we're all where we are for as long as we need to be there, for sure. And I was really still an enabler. I was the financial enabler. And I continued that long into the program. And you have all sorts of reasons, and I can look back and have regrets, but it is what it is. And so we were in Canada how many years then? Over almost, 18 years at that point. 19 years, and in 19 years, my husband had 18 jobs. Yeah. The insanity. Alcoholism continued, even though there was sobriety. And every time something happened, though, or whatever, destroys the trust, destroys everything. And I have to tell this story, and it's not to make fun of him. It's just to give you, and it's not making fun of him. It's really talking about what it's like, was like living with him. Is I had seen Sean not too long ago, about 6 months ago. And this is just an example of what I lived with. So he drove a Mini. I know it's confidential here. He drove a Mini, and he said I was in the parking lot. And it was dark and rainy, as it often is in Vancouver, and he said I lightly tapped the lamppost with my car. Yeah. And so he said he took it in to get, fixed, and they said the car is totaled. You get the picture? So we go from a light tap to total. And that's what my life was like. We went from a light tap, how's everything at work? Oh, good. I come home, and he's fired. Like, how does that happen? And you can only deal with that for so long. I could only accept that for so long. And I don't know what his issues are. And it's not even a judgment. And I remember saying to my sponsor, I can't imagine how he feels. And she said, what makes you think you even know what he feels? And so there just comes a time where you have to take care of yourself. As I said, took me a long time. Takes what it takes. But I finally had to do what's in my best interest. I couldn't live with coming home every day and not knowing what had happened that day. I couldn't live with it anymore. And I couldn't live with that churning anymore. And so, not an easy decision. But it was, when it's right, it's right. You know, they say if you have any doubts, don't. But it came to the point where this is it. There's just, I know what I have to do. And it was a smooth transition for me. It really was. It's not what I had planned, not what I would like, But I will tell you, you know, if you do what's right for you, it will be in your best interest. It'll really be in the other person's best interest, too. Anyway, my life is great. My life is full. I have a life, and how I feel is beyond any of my expectations. It is having a higher power that I know has been with me on this journey. It is a spiritual journey. I can't do any of this by myself or without all of you, and I still keep going to meetings. 40 years later, I do have a fire. I go to meetings. Many a year, life is really great, and I can be of service, and I'm always of service. And there are years, and I remember 25 years being one of the more painful years in my life. And just because somebody's been around a long time does not mean they're sitting in your meeting and are not in extreme pain. Recovery does not mean the absence of problems. If you're in this program long enough, you're going to have money problems, health problems, kid problems. You are going to deal with life. And thank God we have the tools to deal with life. Because I never knew how to do it. Some days I'm a stellar example of Al-Anon, and other days I can wake up and think, what program? What higher power? Like, I don't know what happened here. And I will tell you, from someone who is terrified to speak, I didn't speak for the first 6 months at Al-Anon. I was terrified, and I remember the very first thing I ever said is, my name is Bonnie, and I'm too afraid to speak. To share, to being up here, to now in a business of public relations where I deal with people like, that's another miracle, this program. Never saying no to an Al-Anon request. And I have to tell you that I'm still on my journey of, I don't have it all together. I may look like I have it all together. I may look cute, but... So I've got to tell you, my business is in a partnership with this woman who is more educated, more degrees, more everything, and I can feel less than so quickly. Anyway, she was going back east when her son was going to university, and the family was going back to help set him up. And she said, Bonnie, would you take care of my goldfish, Lucy and Ethel? Be glad to take care of them. They had Lucy and Ethel a long time, right? Family, friends, Lucy and Ethel, and I thought, no problem. So I brought Lucy and Ethel home and put them on my kitchen counter, and in 30 minutes, they were floating. Oh, yes, can you imagine? So, in my keen Al-Anon thinking, I took a picture of each of them. I put them each in a jar, and I put them in the fridge, and, because I thought, I'm going to replace them, right? So how difficult is it to replace goldfish, right? And I'll need to refer to them for sure. So I want on this hunt through every aquarium and fish store in Greater Vancouver area. And it's not easy to replace goldfish. I thought they all looked alike, right? They were big, round, they were old, you know. So I thought, okay, so plan A, I can't just replace them and not say anything, which is what I really would have liked to have done. So what's my other option? I guess tell the truth, hey? So I didn't say anything. I talked to her occasionally and give her an update on how the business is going. And so they were coming back in 2 days. And I'm sitting in the office, and I am now having a panic attack. A full-blown, and I've been known to have panic attacks because fear has still been my friend for many a year in Al-Anon. So now I am hyperventilating. And when I hyperventilate, I lose my feeling in my fingers and my feet. And my heart is pounding, right? And I can't breathe. So this is 36 years in Al-Anon. So I called my sponsor, and she said, okay, what I want you to do is put on some marching music. Hang up the phone, put up some marching music, and I want to you to march and swing your arms so you can get all those hormones and those adrenalines all settled down. Okay, so there I am, 36 years in Al-Anon, and I've got music, and I'm marching in my office all alone. Yeah, just marching away here. And everything settled down. It did. Okay, the feeling came back, and I called her. And, of course, she's not going to tell me what to do, but she said, okay, what are you going to do now? I said, well, I guess I have to tell her the truth. And I'll have to tell you, where it takes me back is all I need is the right set of circumstances for me to put me right back to where I used to be, afraid, terrified, not good enough, not smart enough, ready to be thrown away. And what I would think is what she's going to say, Bonnie, if you can't take care of two goldfish, how can I possibly trust you with our business and our clients? Like, you're out of here, right? That's where I went to. And so, I had to take that risk. But that's where I can still, that scared little Polish girl from Cleveland is still there, still not totally healed. I don't know if she ever will be, but I know what to do now, right? March. anyway, so I called my partner and chatted about all sorts of things. How are you doing? How's the business? And so I said, I've got to tell you about Lucy and Ethel. And she said, they didn't make the trip, did they? I thought, she said, I knew they were old, and sometimes they just, and it's like, it was over. And what we put ourselves through, huh? Oh my God. My problem is between my ears, my thinking, oh my goodness gracious. And so the beat continues, and life continues, and life continues. I've got to tell you about my adorable daughter, who got married a year and a half ago, and I was able to meet my son-in-law. Happens to be in town, and I got to have dinner with him yesterday. They live in Chicago, so he's adorable guy, adorable. We had the shower in Vancouver. The wedding was in Vancouver, okay? And so we have the shower. The in-laws fly in, and we're at this lovely event. And mother-in-law-to-be, gets drunk. Oh, my God. Nothing wrong with, I drink wine now. She gets drunk. Oh my God. I was just like beside myself. You know, still drunk, I reacted drunk. And then I saw it. You know, at the end of the shower, the guys came up, and there was my son-in-law-to-be, Michael. And he goes over to his mother. Again, I should have taken a picture. And he takes the glass of wine out of his mother's hand and hands her a bottle of water. And I thought, oh my God, there am I. And then the other thing is, my adorable Kate likes to party. Is he marrying his mother? I don't know. I came home from that and I thought, I don't want to go to this wedding. I don't want to be there. I don't want anything to do with this. All those feelings that I could get on the phone and I could just rant and get it out. And they said, well, you have a choice. You don't have to go to the wedding. But again, Al-Anon, I do have a choice. What am I going to do? My daughter was raised in this program. She knows where to go if she chooses to go. So what am I going to do? love them. That's what the program has taught me, to love her. I don't have to get into an issue about her drinking. I don't have to get into anything with him. I wasn't going to do anything at the wedding. It was going to unfold, and who was going to get drunk was going to get drunk. And I could just be loving. And I was. And it was a wonderful time. And it was because of my changed attitude, because not the program. I would have gone in there. I would have created such chaos. I would have. And so the journey continues with them. I don't know. I'm glad they live in Chicago. I'm glad I don't have to see too much. And I can love from afar. And I had a lovely evening with my son-in-law last night. And the journey continues. And I am just so grateful for this program. It has given me tools to live by. It has given me a higher power to walk through all the challenges we go through. And we all have a story. We all have a story. We can all, I don't read, you know, I guess be on equal terms with people. I always felt less than. I read a wonderful line the other day. It says, "Under everybody's hair, we're all bald." Isn't that great? I love that line. We're all just people trying to get through this thing. And how wonderful we have each other. I still keep coming to this program. I need it. I am still a work in progress. I love how far I have come. And oh my God, I am really excited about where God is going to take me. I really am, about the future. And there's a wonderful saying that I love in this, courage to change, that really is special to me. Because when I came to this program, I did think that I was hopelessly flawed and unworthy. But it says, when I can take the risk to finally look at myself, my fears can give way to the truth that as a child of God, I am all I need to be. That I am, and this is what the program has given me to believe, that I am loving, that I am lovable and splendid. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.